tell us a bit more about how you got your foot in the door of the VFX industry.
Oh, I was super lucky.
Yeah.
Super, super lucky. Yeah. I think like part of it is definitely skill.
Okay.
Part of it is timing and luck. And, you know, there is that saying, you know, it's not always what you know, it's who you know and stuff like that. And that was definitely kind of half the case for me. My sister was at a friend's party and met this guy called Michael Elder. Shout out Michael Elder. He's an animator at Framestore. Yeah. And yeah, just like they got talking and she was like, oh, that's my brother studying that at uni, you know, and basically connected me and him together. I emailed him and he was like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, perhaps I can get you like a chat with somebody here. And he did.
Hi, and welcome to the VFX Artists Podcast. On today's episode, I have Rory Bryans, an on-set data capture supervisor at MPC London. During today's discussion, I'm looking to find out more about Rory's journey and progression, which began as a runner at Framestore London, to becoming an on-set data capture supervisor at MPC London. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hey, yeah,
there we go. Finally, dude.
Technology.
Yeah, impossible to get a hold of.
No. Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. I mean, I have the same feeling myself about, you know.
Yeah.
Just general life.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know how you do
I'm
it.
I'm here.
Yeah, finally. Yeah, it's been months in the working to try to get
yeah,
you.
Man. Yeah, it's cool. Like, you know, I think something like this is pretty important.
Yeah.
You know, to hear from lots of people's voices throughout the industry and stuff, and get their opinions and their get a sort of insights into what they do, and try and inspire people, and then
yeah, man, definitely, yeah.
Hopefully, make it like less of a wall or a barrier.
Yeah, yeah, but, yeah. Because usually. People or students, for example, they don't have a clue. I mean, I personally, like, I didn't really know about VFX until, I don't know if you remember, we had an industry day at Ravensbourne, I think, during our second year, and then we had MPC and Cinesci and the Mill came in, and then that's when I actually learned about VFX, and then that's literally changed
that's
my
what we wanted to do.
Yeah,
it's important though. It's you know, reaching out to people, reaching out to sort of like the new generation and like the future is like super important, because you know, as great as people are that we work with, you know, having new blood in and having new ideas and fresh ideas and stuff, is really important and exciting, and you know, gives us all a kick up the ass as well.
You know,
I think we could all like get to that stage where we're like, oh, this is fine, you know.
Yeah definitely.
But we want it to be great, we don't want it to be fun.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, thanks a lot for your time, and as usual, welcome to the show.
Hold on, sorry, I gotta change mugs.
What was that you're using?
That was a vintage Framestore mug.
Oh, no way.
I don't wear there anymore.
Can't do that.
I'll do that.
Yeah,
cut that out. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks a lot for your time, and welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Yeah man,
thanks for having me. Thanks for thinking of me. It's really cool.
No, like, yeah, we've seen ourselves quite a bit, because I wanted to work in your industry, and I came to you, and you gave me some advice, and we had a chat. So I've always been like, I've always wanted to work on data capture, because, I mean, firstly, because I love photography and all things camera, and then I love traveling, and just being on set as well is just fascinating to me. So I've always wanted to do it.
It's and then, kind of the perfect job then.
Yeah. But then I think it was a bad timing, because at the time my wife was pregnant, and then I was, becoming...
Yeah, some things are a little bit more important.
So
I'm kind of lucky in that respect, to a certain extent. You know, I don't have any of that, those sort of like really hard tie downs. Obviously you have family, girlfriend and stuff, but you don't have a dependent. Well, I don't have a dependent, so that's the difference. That's a big difference as well.
Let's talk more about that, but before that, can you just introduce yourself for us and then tell us more about what you do?
Hi Kofi. My name is Rory Bryans, and I'm a visual effects on set supervisor at the Moving Picture Company, or MPC for short.
Yeah, awesome, man. But can you tell us, can you explain more about what on-set data capture is?
Sure. So obviously the movie is filmed, right? You know, the big crew gets put together. You have the director, the producers, the DOP, the actors, camera team. And to successfully integrate the visual effects, the post-production, there's tons and tons of reference that we need to gather on set, right? So photography reference, camera notes, lighting reference, 3D scans of the environment so we can place creatures and stuff in the right place and make sure, and you know, touch up any of the sets and stuff like that. So it's the visual effects on set team's responsibility to gather all the relevant data to help smooth that process in post, right? So bridge the gap between what's being filmed and then the artist back in the studio at the vendor. But basically bridge that gap, give them all the information they need because they're not there, right? So when they get turnover from the client, a lot of the time, you know, if we weren't there, we weren't getting all this stuff, it would just be a 2D plate, right? It would just be whatever was shot through camera, and they have no context. They don't know if, you know, where the lights were. They wouldn't know where the camera was in relationship to X, Y, and Z, the height, the tilt, focal length. They wouldn't know any of that stuff. I mean, now you get some of that in metadata and stuff, but still that's an extra step, right? You're now adding, having to go into the metadata and pulling out data that way. So that's kind of what we do. We integrate with the rest of the team on set and gather that data.
Amazing. Just tell us a bit more about how you got your foot in the door of the VFX industry.
Oh, I was super lucky. Super lucky. I think like part of it is definitely skill. Part of it is timing and luck. And, you know, there is that saying, you know, it's not always what you know, it's who you know, and stuff like that. And that was definitely kind of half the case for me. My sister was at a friend's party and met this guy called Michael Elder. Shout out Michael Elder. He's an animator at Framestore. Just like they got talking, and she was like, oh, that's my brother studying that at uni, you know, and basically connected me and him together. I emailed him and he was like, yeah, sure, like, you know, perhaps I can get you like a chat with somebody here. And he did, you know, and so I went in and I showed I think I was in my second year at Ravensbourne, and I showed my showreel and my life drawing and stuff like that. And they seemed to like it. They had nothing on, but they were like, oh, there might be like I think somebody was going on maternity leave or somebody was leaving or something. There was like, there might be a job coming up in 4 weeks on the weekends. Would you be up for it? And I was like, that's perfect, because, you know, I'm still at uni. So ideally I won't be working during the week, it'll be weekends. And then pretty much like on the money, like 4 weeks later on the button, they said, this job's come up. Do you want it? And annoyingly, they asked me to start the weekend of Reading Festival, and I had tickets to Reading Festival. Blink 182 were playing, and I was really gutted. I missed it. I took the job.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I got in. I started off as a receptionist at Framestore on the weekends. So it was sort of like a runner/receptionist.
Yeah.
Which was great. Got my foot in the door, you know, started talking to people here and there, but, you know, there weren't, you know, there's not many people in the weekends. Obviously at times there are, you know, in any sort of industry, in creative industry, when you're trying to do the final push, there's some people coming the weekends to sort of like get the thing over the line and stuff. I didn't really see too many people, but made some good relationships, especially with the other runners that were in. And then as soon as I got a bit more time to myself, so like, you know, freed up a bit of time during the week when, you know, I could fit more sort of, what'd you call it?
Training.
I don't know what I mean. Yeah, training and stuff, but like I could like fit, I could fit in more, I had more opportunity to work during the week.
Okay.
And so I picked up some more shifts. That's it, shifts.
Yeah, sure.
I picked up some more shifts during the week, and then that's when I started sort of like talking to more people and put myself out there a little bit more.
Yeah,
that's how I got in.
Yeah. I don't know if I remember right, but I think Graham still had a motion capture department? I think were you trying to get into that department?
Yeah, I tried to. So it's a bit of a tricky one. So they were full, basically. They didn't have any space for me.
Yeah.
But when I was still a runner, they absorbed some of equipment from the photography department. There was a motion capture department and then photography department. And they absorbed some of their kit, well, all their kit.
Yeah.
And there was quite a lot of stuff, and you know, it wasn't necessarily like catalogued in the best way, organised in the best way. So they reached out to my manager and said, you know, do you have anybody on the team that knows anything about cameras? Anybody that's kind of interested in cameras and stuff?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, I think I know the person. She knew that I'd studied photography, and then, you know, I was obviously studying animation at the time. Mm-hmm. And she obviously entrusted me as well. She put me forward for it. And I was like, yeah, definitely. So I spent like the next week or 2 weeks just down in the basement by myself, with like music on, just cataloging all this stuff, like,
this is
good, this is throwaway pile. And I basically and then, you know, folded all the blue screens and all this stuff with some help of my fellow runners. And then they came down and they had a look, and they were really happy with what I did. And then from that moment on, they would always ask me, which is great. So they would, you know, if they had any clients coming in or any like mocap sessions or whatever, then they would get me in. I would go in like after work and they'd teach me some stuff, or like, you know, come in on days when I'm not working and they teach me some stuff. Really took me under their wing. It was cool. And so when they absorbed all that photography stuff, they basically became like the on-set team rather than just the motion capture team. So they eventually rebranded as the Capture Lab, which that's what I think they're known as today as well. And so that's when I sort of picked up a lot of the skills that I use today, and what got me to where I am today, like, you know, photogrammetry and HDRIs with cameras, and, you know, to a certain extent motion capture, but I haven't touched that in a long time. A bunch of other stuff like survey and stuff like that. And they also gave me my first opportunity to go on set. First jobs were 47 Ronin and Closed Circuit, which is a what's his name? Oh, I can't remember the actor's name. But that was cool. We got to go to Wembley Stadium at nighttime, empty. And I just remember like walking out into Wembley Stadium, like football stadium. Yeah. Like, wow, this is nuts.
Yeah.
I've made it.
Amazing. Oh wow.
Yeah, and so when I was trying to push to get into that department, they were really good. They're really like honest with me and stuff. And they're like, look, you know, we love having you on board, and if we could, like, we would have you here full time. But it just wasn't going to happen. And it was around the time where I'd finished uni, and I'd been training in other departments. I'd been training in Matchmove, and they were pretty much offering me a job. And so it was kind of like, do I stay as a runner but still have opportunities in this department like whenever I wanted, or do I move into Matchmove and get, you know, a real job? Every now and then when I was available, go on set. So that's basically what I did. I took the Matchmove job because I thought it'd be really good to sort of like further my career and also, you know, get some shows under my belt, and then just get more experience, and like perhaps like the onset stuff was fun for a while, and maybe I'll like, you know, go this way, maybe go into lighting or go into another department. I went to Matchmove and had a really good time, had a great team, it was awesome. I was there for like a couple of years, and and every now and then I still went back on set. I just missed it, like I couldn't get away from it, like, you know.
I didn't know you spent a few years in Matchmove.
I worked on a bunch of things at Framestore, some fun projects, but man, the team there were awesome. Really enjoyed my time. It was a very, very tough decision actually to leave. But I made the right decision.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Fast forward that, and then he moved on to MPC. How did it start at MPC? What level how did it start?
So, like I said, I was in Matchmove, and I had carried on with all the Onset stuff. And a friend of mine who had worked at Framestore in the Onset team, the Capture Lab there, he had gone freelance. Mm-hmm. And in between freelance gigs, he actually picked up a short-term contract at MPC, the data capture team there.
Yeah,
and he got along with them really well. I think he knew a couple of people through friends anyway, or through his girlfriend or something. Mm-hmm. And when he was leaving, they were like, "Well, we need to replace him," and said, "Do you know anybody that might be interested?" Mm-hmm. And he recommended me. Actually, mm-hmm. I think we may have gone for lunch first.
Okay.
And then he was just like, "Do you want me to recommend you?" And I was like, "Sure."
Yeah.
Sounds good. Because I mean, like I said, I kept wanting to go back on set, right? I was in Matchmove and I was still having a great time there. And I owe those guys and like Framestore a lot, mm-hmm. you know, because they gave me that opportunity and they saw that stuff in me. But like, I was like, hell yeah, let's go. Mm-hmm. I want to be on set all the time.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, go for it. They put me forward, went for the interview, and mm-hmm. yeah, luckily I got the job. I mean, I don't know who I was up against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I managed to get it somehow.
Yeah,
I must have been like the only applicant or something. They were really desperate.
No, but I guess like good favors, and like you said, it's about who you know. I guess
it's timing as well. Yeah. You know, I guess you know, for me, I wasn't bored or anything at Framestore, but there was definitely something.
Yeah,
it's like I almost didn't know something was missing until I was offered it. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, really glad I did it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah,
you got to take those chances. Like, you know, I think I think it's really, there's nothing wrong with it. I think it's, you know, quite easy to sort of stay where you are. But like, I think if you get offered something, you should probably take it.
Yeah.
You never know. It may never get offered again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I been at Framestore for like 4 years by that point. I was like, I quite like it here. Like, I know everybody knows me. This is great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. But then, sometimes you get too comfortable when you stay in one place for too long.
Exactly. Yeah. You need to have that fire beneath you or behind you, or whatever the saying is, you know, to like make you worry a bit, be the new guy again, and sort of have to find your way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So with data capture, is at the levels of, I mean, of course there are levels of, what do you call it?
Seniority.
Yeah, of course, seniority. So you do have to start off as a junior, or were you like a mid artist at that point?
To be honest, I don't know what level I started at.
Okay.
I don't think it said on my contract.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of I don't know if there were sort of those brackets then. But like I definitely went in as a sort of like, you know, junior mid kind of level, you know, like I'd been on set, I'd kind of done everything that they brought up in the interview, apart from I hadn't actually done any theodolite work, like any total station survey at that point. I'd used one, but I hadn't ever done it, if that makes sense. Like I've never done it like practically on a set. And so that was the one thing. And I was really honest with them in the interview. I was like, I've used it in Matchmove, and I know what press buttons on the screen when we've been in like the mocap studio, but I haven't I've never like actually practically done it and had to like find a little on set where I'm not in front of camera, not in the way, or nobody's eye line, not blocking a light, and be able to see everything else around the set to be like ding 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 and pick all these points out. So but they're like, that's fine, we can teach you, and they did.
You've frozen up a bit, but hopefully catches up.
I got bad signal.
Yeah, that's okay.
I got bad signal.
That's okay. We can
cut around it.
Yeah. So, you're back.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, there are a lot of challenges and responsibilities with working on set. So how do you manage that responsibility? Because you have the studio counting on.
Yeah, I don't know how I manage it. I think you just, I think obviously when you start out in a career, right? When you start out in the field, you start with less responsibility. And as you grow and as you further your career, you sort of just naturally take on more responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of it. I think when you step back and you look, oh, actually, like, well, I'm responsible for this, this, and this, it's quite a lot. But it doesn't always feel like that when you're doing it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, like you kind of you just have to do it. If you stop and think about it too much, obviously you have to think and plan, but like if you stop and think about like, oh man, I'm responsible for all this stuff. I don't know if that's a good thing. Like I think you just kind of have to roll with it to a certain extent. Obviously you have to be wary of like what you're doing is important. And you know, you're representing the company or representing the visual effects team as a whole. You know, there's lots of responsibility, you know, talking to clients and building up those relationships and stuff like that. But I think being in the position for a certain amount of time helps, right? Yeah. And you naturally just take on more responsibility.
Yeah.
So that, I think that's how you kind of manage it sort of naturally, I guess. Obviously, there's still points where you're like, you know, we're like, well, you know, there's still some of those moments where it's like, oh, that's quite big.
Yeah.
I think that really the, you know,
yeah,
one in a million.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. But then also, your job requires you to be on set, and sometimes that's usually out of the country for a long periods of time.
Yeah.
I'm just very curious. I'm just very curious. I know we've talked about it at the beginning, but I'm just curious about how you manage that with being away from the studios and your family, as well as. I don't know if anyone's ever asked you about how, psychologically, how that affects you, because I'm sure sometimes it can get lonely, or depending on who you're with and who you meet, I guess.
Yeah, I think it really depends on who you're with and the crew you're with, usually. I can't really think of any time that I've gone away and like not liked it or like disliked it, you know. I've had some where it's been like, it's all right, you know, but I don't think I've ever had any sort of times where I've disliked the crew that I go away with, but the way I manage it, I mean, it's what I signed up for at the end of the day, you know, and it's part of the job that I really enjoy. I love traveling. First of all, I love the work that I do, right? And I'll just go anywhere where I've got to go to do what I do and meet the people that I meet and achieve what we achieve. And then second of all, I really like traveling. I like experiencing new places, even though a lot of the time, you know, we sort of go there and we don't have much time off and we don't really get to experience the country that much, like in terms of, you know, I don't go and go see all the sites, but just being in it and sort of like absorbing things, you know, working with local crews and, and you know, on your odd day off, you do just go and have a sort of walk around the town that you're staying in and stuff like that. That's definitely takes the edge off, because, you know, you're almost distracted. I feel worse for the people here that might be missing me.
Right.
You know, who may want me around, may need me to help with something.
Yeah.
You know, family, girlfriend and whatever else, because they're the ones that are stuck with the sort of normal day to day. Not that it's necessarily boring, but like, you know, it's the day to day, it's, you know, whatever. And then I'm away and obviously I'm really busy.
Yeah.
But I'm also distracted. Right. So I don't necessarily have a lot of time to sort of sit there and think about stuff. Obviously I miss everybody when I'm away. I miss my colleagues, I miss my family and stuff, but it's like I said, just what you kind of sign up for. And then when you're back, it kind of makes things extra special as well.
Just
take full advantage of when you're back.
If you're
back for long enough.
I was just gonna say. So which countries have you been in, and
I've been to, like, again, I could probably keep saying luckily, because I really do feel like it's quite a niche job to be in, and to be able to do it and do it at a certain level I still think it's really lucky. But you know, saying that, you know, I've been in this industry like 10 years now, and you know, I've been at NPC for 7 years, so some of it's luck and some of it's hard work, right? But yeah, no, I've been to a ton of places, and like places that I'd never, probably never have gone to, or at least not in this time frame. Like I'm not that old. I'm only 32, and I've been to a bunch of these places for work, you know. And then there's all the places I've been to personally. But yeah, I mean, memorable moments, probably I went all over India for the Jungle Book.
Yeah,
I was there for about a month, which was really cool. We sort of traveled around and sort of trekked through forests and like clambered up waterfalls and and stuff like that, which was really cool. Taking lots of reference textures and round shots, photogrammetry and HDRIs and all kinds of all that good stuff. Because obviously the artists back at MPC then, along with, you know, just their artistic flair and stuff, they that helped sort of inform and the environment builds and stuff like that. Book. Kenya for The Lion King was pretty special. We were there for like 5 or 6 weeks, and that was that was pretty epic, and we had a great team. Like it was awesome. It was so much fun. That was really cool. Sort of helicopter, that's kind of like the most helicopter work I'd ever done in one stint. And that's like my favorite part of the job, is like when you get to do sort of like more extreme stuff, is my favorite. Then I've been to Iceland a couple of times, and one time I went and it was just myself and this gentleman named Thor from a company called True North, which is an Icelandic sort of film production company, and they're great, they're awesome. And so I was paired up with him, and we just went out in his like pickup truck and drove around some of Iceland, and he was giving me like history lessons about the weather and their horses and stuff like that. He's such an interesting person, like really kind and really knowledgeable, and just like really helped me out. We ran and just like shot a bunch of reference in sort of ice caves and stuff like that, which was really fun. You know, we'd sort of get there and then I'd be there filming by myself, and he would sort of help with bits and bobs, but really was sort of just like my babysitter. That was really fun, because it was really cool to sort of like go out on these little excursions, just like the two of us, because normally it's like a bit more of a team, and it was quite fun. It was just us, and we're like hiking over glaciers and stuff like that, which I'd never done before. We got on one of those big like super bus jeep things where they can control the air pressure from inside the cabin, and like the wheels are like as tall as I am. It's bonkers, and it's funny because we're like hiking across, and he was like, oh wait, and this bus came past, and he like knows everybody there, like he's worked on these glaciers for like 20 years 30 years, and he basically like hitchhiked us a ride on he just like pulled them, flagged them down, and we just got on and just like got a lift, which was pretty cool. And then like I've been to Hong Kong for a month, which was pretty sweet. I went out again with a really really cool team, and we're just, that was for Godzilla versus King Kong, and it was just a good time. Worked really hard, the team were nice, and then the client team came out and met us there, because they were coming to shoot plates after that, and they were really cool as well. And then recently on the job that I'm on now, I've been sort of going all over the place. So I think on this one I've been Iceland again, New Zealand, Jordan, Costa Rica 3 times,
right,
a couple of places in the States. It's cool. But then I've been like places all over Europe as well, you know. It's just like the list is pretty big.
You must be like fully immunized with like all of the, a lot
pretty
of
much. Yeah, pretty much. But I still have to, like, every time I go, we have to just like double check. Like I still, you know, because it's like, when did you have it? Are you still covered, kind of thing? And I've got all these different like leaflets and forms that have been filled out by different doctors and stuff. And I'm trying to compare them and like match them up. I need to have like some sort of central database. But usually I'm about to go to the Namibia on a job and on Saturday, and I got called up and they're like, if you had this, I was like, all right, you don't need to come in. I was like, brilliant.
Nice.
I need to have more time at home.
Because
it is, like you said, you know, it's the time at home is precious, right? And you have to make the most of it. And anything like doing stuff like that, obviously, it's very important. I'm happy to do it, but it really does eat into your day.
So you talk about being with teams sometimes. So I'm just wondering, does the team usually that off from NPC, or do you assume that team when you get to the set?
It varies.
Okay.
You know, it really does vary. And there's pros and cons to both, for sure. But yeah, so normally on a you know, feature film set, there would be we have our client, whether that's, you know, Disney or Paramount or Universal. They would have hired a visual effects supervisor, producer, whole production team, mm-hmm. and then like lead, maybe an on-set supervisor their side, and then, you know, lead data wrangler, wrangling assistant, and some PAs and witness camera operators. And sometimes, so that's the sort of normal, what I'd call the normal setup. Mm-hmm. And then we embed one, maybe two NPC people, depending on the size of the project, into that team. And so we kind of slot in somewhere around the sort of wrangler, on-set supervisor kind of position, in terms of sort of like responsibility and stuff. And it's our job to make sure that the data that everybody's collecting, the whole team, is sort of geared towards NPC's needs, shot the way that the our lighting team are expecting the HDRIs, and shot the textures are shot in controlled lighting setups, and making sure we get chrome balls and HDRIs and the photo booth, all that kind of stuff. And so we're there to do technical work, and we're also there to sort of be, I wouldn't say the bridge, because the communication between NPC and the clients is usually really good, but it's kind of like maybe like a technical bridge between like, you know, people that may not necessarily be in those meetings with the client. Mm-hmm. To be able to say, hey, can we get like one photo of this, please? Yeah. You know, it's kind of like we're kind of that team.
Yeah.
And then we have projects where the entire team is NPC, or at least sourced by NPC. You know, sometimes, you know, we'll hire in a couple of freelancers to help out, usually from a sort of our trusted list of freelancers. Mm-hmm. So those kind of gigs are sort of like maybe smaller projects that we've been working on, that maybe we're covering, just like reshoots or something, or a lot of our sort of bigger environment shoots, like Godzilla vs. King Kong and Lion King and stuff like that, we would take an entire team of NPC people, usually.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, as someone who tends to recruit others in your department, what do you usually look for or expect from candidates applying to join your department?
I mean, experience is great, but I think like that sort of overall like connection at the beginning is like quite important. So being able to talk to the person is really good, and hold like a pretty solid conversation with them. Like I like to think the interviews that I conduct are fairly like laid back in a sense, because I kind of want to get to know the person, right? Yeah. I want to know a little bit about them, see the way they tick, because we have to be confident about sending them away, possibly by themselves, to spend 2 or 3 months with our clients and stuff like that. So that's the sort of I guess the not the main thing, but the subconscious thing I kind of look for. And then obviously experience is great. So that comes in two forms, basically. You have the visual effects artist experience, and then you have the on-set experience. Not everybody needs both, of course. Like it's ideally they would have both, you know, even if it's just a little bit of one and a little bit of the other, it's great, because you've had a taste of each one. But then if it's more you're a visual effects artist but you want to start going on set, then that's great, because you already have that sort of the idea. You have the visual effects pipeline sort of always in the back of your head when you're doing this stuff, when you're doing the workshop, you're always thinking about how is this going to integrate. But for those kind of people, if they haven't been on set before, then I would make sure they had like strong camera knowledge. They know about, you know, production, cinema cameras, lenses, distortion, and all those sort of varying factors within camera, as well as being able to use cameras as well, because like you said, a lot of our work is photography, so they need to be a pretty comfortable photographer to be able to like quickly change settings for and the right settings for what we're trying to capture at the time, because you know it can be quite time sensitive. And then the on-set side, if you've got more on-set experience, again, that's great, because we don't really have to teach those sort of on-set soft skills. You've probably already seen an HDRI rig, you've probably already seen a LiDAR, you've probably already seen this stuff. Whether you've used it or not is one thing, but as long as you've seen it and you've seen people use it, and then you can always sort of mold and teach the sort of VFX pipeline side. You know, we could be like, hey, this is blah 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 from assets, let's chat to them about, you know, what's the most important thing to get. Here's you know, Marco from environments, let's let's talk to him about what he's going to need, you know. And slowly over time it starts like building up their confidence and their knowledge of of the VFX pipeline. So yeah, I think they're the kind of like three main sort of candidates we get. You know, people with both VFX artists or on set. So yeah, again, across all of them, they need to have good camera knowledge is pretty key, and then communication skills is good.
Yeah, sure. As well. That's great. I'm just curious about what have other people in your position, especially as on set data capture supervisors, gone on to do after transitioning from their role, like maybe leaving or.
I was like, what would I do after this?
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy at the moment, to be honest. Like, I know it's still fairly new. I've been kind of doing it anyway a little bit. Like, I've done bits and bobs here, did some little bits on Cats, did some stuff on Sonic. You know, sort of additional sort of supervisional stuff. But now the project I'm working on at the moment, I've been doing it on that as well, and now officially doing it. I think I'm pretty happy where I am. I think, you know, a lot lots of people that have been in similar positions can and will go on to like being overall supervisor client side or, or and stuff like that. But really, again, it really depends on the person, depends on the opportunities they get and stuff like that. But for me, I'm really happy in my role, and just getting more getting more responsibility and, and sort of sought after more is kind of my goal. You know, being in demand is always nice.
I mean, you come across as very happy, and like it sounds like everything always goes right, but I'm sure there's always been a bad day. Have you?
No, it's never been a bad day.
Right.
Yeah, of course there is. Yeah, there's always bad days. There's bad days. There's bad days in all jobs. I mean, that's why it's called a job and not just like
fun
hobby.
Yeah.
You know. You don't always get. And I think like I'm really privileged to be in an area where I really enjoy my work and I enjoy what I do, and I get to have all these like amazing experiences and get paid for it. You know, it's pretty cool. Like, obviously, there are tough days. Like, there are, you know, times where you work, you know, long hours and stuff like that. But, you know, you all sort of club in together, and you all sort of stand together in solidarity and sort of get each other through it and stuff like that. You know, and just like any job, it really is just kind of like any job, really.
Yeah. What's the worst that could happen as an on-set data capture? Would that be like forgetting to...
Oh, we'd lose the hard drives.
All right.
All the work goes missing, because like a lot of the stuff that we do, you get one chance, right? So
Of course.
Whether we're on a like a big trip, big like environment shoot, and you may get like 2-3 days in each location. If somehow a hard drive goes down or data gets lost or whatever, that's kind of the worst thing that can happen, because you can't go back. There's been a lot of money spent to go there. And then same again on, you know, if you're just on a set, you know, if you're Pinewood or Leavesden. Again, you're only going to have the lighting and camera there for how long they're there for that setup. So you've got to get it right. And so, they're the kind of worst things. Obviously, like, you know, that never happens, really. I think I've experienced that maybe twice in my entire career, or something like that's happened. Because, you know, you back it up once, you back it up again. And maybe a third time, if you've got another drive, you know, you try and you spread out, you spread the drives out. It's like when we travel, we sort of spread them out as well. So, you know, if I die, if I get hit by a bus and the hard drive explodes, at least the data makes it back.
Of course, but that's quite a big responsibility. I would have assumed they'd trust that with a separate entity or a separate company to
Third party.
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes we get like secure couriers to send stuff sometimes if needed, but a lot of time we're sort of traveling back with the data, so it's, I think personally it's safer with the crew, because they know how sensitive it is and stuff like that.
yeah Okay, cool.
That's probably the worst thing. I don't know. Apart from, I mean, there's, you know, when we're on set and it's not, you know, I'm not saying it's it happens or anything like that, but and they're all, we have all these risk assessments done by the health and safety teams and stuff like that. But there's always risk of injury, right? Sometimes working from height, heavy machinery and stuff like that. I guess that would be, that'd be one.
Yeah.
I think only, luckily only one project that I've worked on had somebody who got hurt.
All right.
And they ended up being okay. But you know, that's pretty good hit rate when you think about like all the projects that I've worked on and stuff.
Yeah. Any advice for anyone looking to follow your footsteps?
Don't. No, I'm joking. No, I'd say yeah, try to go for it. Like if it's something that you think interests you and you like living out of a suitcase sometimes and stuff like that, then then go for it. It can be really, really good. The advice I would say is watch, you know, read some stuff online, watch some videos. There's like tons of resources out there. Like sometimes I think, like, did we waste 3 years at uni, Kofi? You know,
I know
having that sort of degree gets you your foot in the door because people are like, oh, he's taking it seriously, right? He's not just watching stuff on YouTube, but like, there's so much resource out there now, whether that's on YouTube or actually like paid for courses and stuff. It's crazy. So maybe do something like that, you know, look around, see whether there's some courses. I think there's a company called Cave. I've been seeing lots of stuff in Cave on LinkedIn. They've been doing some on set courses and stuff, which look pretty cool. Get hands on with the camera. I mean, the industry standard, at least in the UK, is Canon. So as long as you're sort of comfortable with Canon systems, that's always handy. I know some people use Nikon. Lots of people in the States use Nikon, actually. I don't know why. Get hands on with that kind of stuff. Like go out and like shoot some stuff. You don't necessarily need to like do like a whole shoot. You don't need like a red and like chrome balls and everything and HDRI, but like go out and like shoot stuff. You can download, I'm pretty sure Meshroom, which is a photogrammetry software, is open source. I think you can just download it. Or get something like Agisoft Metashape, which I think is like $140 if you can afford that. Get that and go and shoot some photogrammetry. Process it. Fly around it, have a look, you know.
Yeah.
Just practice. It's quite a hard, from what I understand, it's quite a hard thing to get into the freelance side. You know, you kind of have to know somebody because it's not like you can just go to
a recruiter.
Pinewood, and just be like, here's my CV, can I work on a movie, please? You know, it's not really how it works, where obviously a vendor, you can come in, you can go on a website, or you know, when we're all back at work, you probably come in with a CV as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how that works nowadays. They'll probably just tell you to apply online.
Yeah.
But yeah, just keep your ear to the ground and apply. I think personally, and this is just biased, my side, I think it's working for a vendor gives you really good, like, base knowledge of stuff.
Yeah.
And you learn from people who are going to be picking up your data, right? Freelance side, not necessarily, it happens all the time. You'll meet people from the vendor, they'll come on set, be that CG supervisor or data capture or whatever, and they'll be able to tell you stuff. And I'm sure there are plenty of people, freelancers who know what they're talking about, you know what they're doing. But just having that definite education kind of from a vendor side, I think, is really important. And then what you do after that is kind of up to you. I've obviously found success staying at vendor side. Some people do, some people don't, some people move on, you know, and everybody's successful in their own way, really. But yeah, that's kind of what I'd suggest. Probably you know, look vendor side first, you know, if you want to get on set, rather than like having to find somebody that you, a family member who might know somebody else's cousin who may be working on set, you know, you're better off probably looking vendor side.
Amazing, man.
Just reach out. Like, I'm on LinkedIn and stuff. I don't check it that often, because I'm sure lots of people, you know, maybe people watch this and be like, I messaged you on LinkedIn, it took you a month to respond, but I will respond.
that's
the main thing.
That's something I'm quite keen on passing on, because it's so easy just for you to like reach out and then just either just having someone to look at your work and just getting feedback, or just just finding someone to be a mentor for you. But
yeah, for sure. Like, I'm more than happy to help people. Like, you know, I had I had Mr. Elder help me out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like to think I've helped some people out along the years, and I want to continue to do that. Because you've got to, like, feed back to the universe, man. You need to give back to the universe a little bit.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You know, I feel like I've been given so much that I want to give something back.
Yeah, amazing.